The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello, I'm Kiran Kapoor. And this week, we're talking about customer experience. Andrew Hatcher explains why it's so important.
Consistent and effective customer experience gives that customer confidence that they can ally themselves with the brand and effectively become an advocate of that brand.
And how it has to be measured carefully.
It's like sitting at a restaurant, and if the waiter comes up to you every 3 minutes and says everything all right, you know, you tend to go away pretty quickly.
But first, regular contributor Charles Nixon.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College.
So we're welcoming back Charles Nixon, founder of the Cambridge Marketing College. Charles, you wanted to talk about physical items of marketing.
Brochures to you and me. Essentially speaking, lockdown, which will persist obviously for quite a while yet, has brought about a change in the marketplace, which is new to, I think, nearly all of us, in the fact that, to paraphrase Shakespeare, we all play many parts in our time. And when in the past we would make a distinction between a customer when they were at work, whether they were a user or an influencer or a buyer, the fact that they also had a home life where they were a partner, a parent, just actually going about their normal life of whatever it is they did as a spare time. Now these are all combined. What we have is the same person occupying many particular roles, but in the same location and probably using the same technology. So from a marketing communications point of view, the world has changed quite radically. And indeed, therefore, one needs to reappraise what medium one might use. So my phrase of brochures is, I think, rather important, as now you have the ability as marketers to actually get access to people. You need obviously their addresses, but you get access to people who have got the time to sit and read a brochure. And indeed may well look forward to it on the basis that it is not something that's on a computer screen and is not something that necessarily is a Zoom call. It takes them away from the mundane. It takes them into an area where something becomes more interesting to look at. And as long as they're done well, brochures have the ability to obviously allow a large amount of detail and data to be passed over. As well as aspirational content to be given.
I think it's quite interesting because this is just after Argos have finally decided they're going to get rid of their brochure, their big brochure, which many of us remember flicking through as children. Yeah. And then when you're setting up your first house, but they've actually gone away from that. So your view is almost that they could now consider bringing it back, perhaps.
I think they may well consider bringing it back, but not necessarily in the huge form it became, which could only be physically given away. The cost of mailing it was horrendous. But yes, I believe they could do, because people have got the time and the ability to spend browsing. Browsing on a web is fine, and you obviously have to continue to do the digital side of things, and digital communications is still going to be absolutely essential. But it needs to consider to be backed up now. I don't know about a large number of our listeners, but I see that my physical post now consists of several leaflets and brochures, probably as many items that are unsolicited as are actually correspondence. You can argue, of course, that there's a lot of issue here which needs to be considered, which is recycling and the cost to planet. But there's also the element of thinking about conversion of people's long-standing desires. So a lot of companies can now take the situation and say, well, you've got the time to consider it. Here's the information that you might want.
So this is brochures perhaps for something that is a longer term something to think about, as opposed to a quick brochure about, buy this pair of shoes now. Is that what you're thinking? It's ones where you would need to give more information.
I think it could even be the quick buy another pair of shoes now. But I suspect the likelihood is that people are more likely now that they've probably got a smaller outgoings, therefore have more savings, that they will probably move up market in what they actually spend and buy. So therefore, I would suggest it could be clothing. It could be household items. We're seeing a considerable increase, obviously, in people buying things for the house, improving the house, adding large-scale developments into their gardens for offices. I saw a report at the weekend that one of the suppliers of home offices in the gardens has seen something like a 300% increase in demand. It also is for significant capital items as well. And not relying solely on digital, because digital was inherently, because it was cheaper. It does have a lot of benefits, obviously, in audio and video, but it doesn't allow you necessarily to browse or to consider at your leisure. So I think there are elements here. The other element I think that's important is that there is now a merging between people buying for the office at home and people buying for the office at the office, because we're not in the office. You look at the some of the major newspapers now. The Times has an office supplement on Saturdays, where people, you know, are buying stuff for their offices or for their home offices. It's recognised that, you know, people are at home but still doing a job, and the result of which is there's a merger of media available.
That was very interesting, the idea that we should be considering perhaps some more tactile and some more, I was going to say, some non-digital things in this very digital world. And Charles, I have to congratulate you on the first Shakespeare reference I think we've had in the podcast so far.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.
So my guest today is Andrew Hatcher, who rejoices in the title of Mentor in Residence at the Cambridge Judge Business School. Andrew, welcome. You're very keen on customer experience, and you were saying you think customer experience is actually more important now than the marketing mix.
Yes, good morning, Kieran. Thanks very much for inviting me onto the programme yet again. It's a pleasure. I'm not sure it's more important than marketing mix, but what I'm saying perhaps is that we've spent a lot of time in the last, I don't know how many decades, focusing on marketing mix. But one of the problems with marketing mix as it's componentized, 4 P's or 7 P's or however many P's you might be focused on. And one of the problems here is the customer experiences those P's independently, often of each other. And so sometimes they're not consistent and they're not, they don't hang together effectively. And all of that affects what I would then call the customer experience. So the customer experience is the way that they interact with each of those components, and often those interactions are inconsistent and incomplete. And so that's the thing I think we need to start to focus on, which is how does the customer experience all of those elements together?
So rather than us thinking of the mix elements independently, we should actually start with the customer. Is that your thesis here?
Yes, I think so. I mean, ultimately, in this world where the customer is really has so much more power, have so much more choice to change and so much more ability to choose understanding and information about the choices they're making, we have to make sure that not just the product or the service we provide is good and it's priced well and all the other elements of the P, but actually the experience that they have from the minute they understand or are aware of your brand through to all of the post-purchase activities, right through to advocacy, is all driven by a consistent and effective customer experience, which gives that customer confidence that they can ally themselves with the brand and effectively become an advocate of that brand.
The theory you're talking there is the ladder of loyalty.
Yes, I think it's probably, as always, these things are never quite as simple as a ladder. I think all of us experience brands in different ways. We may climb the ladder slightly differently, we may get to different levels, but also the concept is we may be climbing down the ladder if we experience certain parts of the experience with that brand as not being up to standard or not being as good as we expected, or often not as good as the last time we encountered that brand. So customer experience, I suppose, is the way in which the speed at which you rise up the ladder and at which you stay at the right place in the ladder, and preventing you also from coming down that ladder should something go wrong with your experience.
That's interesting. So there's a lot of emphasis on consistency of experience there as well.
Yes, I think consistency, it's interesting. One of the things, if we look back in time, I mean, people used to be happy to have access to certain things. Now, there is almost an expectation that most things that people need or want are available. And it's really just a question of how quickly or how effectively or what price can I buy things at. So if you interact with the brand, and you know there are some classic examples of this that everyone talks about Apple and BMW and lots of other brands that have worked heavily on this, which is they maintain a level of customer experience right from the point of sale. So when you walk into a BMW showroom, for instance, the way that the staff interact with you, the way that you're shown the products, the ability for you to experience those products and the services allied with them, right through to when you put your car into a service, the engineer will send you a personalized video showing you the underside of your car and all the elements that they've checked out. So the consistency of performance of the brand is maintained. Now, it means that you have to be absolutely laser focused on maintaining this quality level, because as soon as the customer perceives that the level of experience has dropped, there it will become obvious to them, and that's when they will ask a question as to what's going on.
Okay, so how do I think about customer experience? Because you actually talk about having a CEO, a customer experience officer.
Yes, I truly believe that as most companies develop, the traditional titles of most companies have fallen by the wayside, I believe. And instead of someone just being involved in marketing, which you know we all know at some levels is often associated with newsletters and a bit of brochureware and all that kind of stuff, which I hope is historical, but who knows? I think marketing has moved up the levels of acceptance and seniority. But ultimately, if your customer is not happy with the experience, not only will they not necessarily come to you or will stay with you if they introduce to your experience, they may leave. And the worst thing in this world is, of course, they may tell others not to go to you. What you want to do is make sure that that customer is happy from end to end. And effectively, you provide an experience that is unexpected as much as possible, so that they will then talk about it and refer that experience to others, so that you generate a kind of referral mechanism because of the level of experience you're putting together.
So it's quite a tension there, because you're talking about unexpected customer experience, but also consistent experience.
Yes, and this is quite a nuance. So one of the things I spent a lot of time dealing with is the sense of customer journey mapping, which I think is pretty well known now. So if you and I, certainly with all the startups I work with at the university, we spend quite a lot of time working through the customer journey, as in when's the first time the customer's going to experience you? What are the touch points on that journey all the way through? And are there points of weakness in that journey? Is there a point in that journey when the customer experience has the potential to drop below? So, for instance, if you're going out to someone who may be a contractor to your company, is the chance that the experience is going to be different high? And if it is, then what do you do about that? But also within that journey, you can identify points where the customer has an expectation of experience, and you can just tweak the experience up a bit, and so you give them unexpected results. So, for instance, I come back to that BMW example. I believe when they send the video out of you, if your car's in service, and they send a video of your car in service, you can open up a chat line with the engineer that was inspecting your car. So that's unexpected in the sense that most people don't expect to be able to talk to the person who's just inspected their car, online at the point which you receive the video. You can have a chat about your car. So that's unexpected. It's obviously high quality. It obviously takes some money and some effort to put it together, but that's how you start to understand where the customer is most interested and where you can provide stuff that they're going to talk about and refer you on for.
So how would I go about measuring customer experience? Where do I even start?
Right, that's extremely good, because one of the biggest problems here is to a certain extent is measurement. One of the biggest problems, I suppose, over time is that I tend to feel that companies have grasped at certain things. One of my little phrases is that CRM is the enemy of customer experience, because CRM is generally a mechanism, and I say CRM meaning customer relationship management. So companies have grasped the idea of gathering data around companies as being, their contribution to customer experience. Now, part of the problem is that CRM collects data, but customer experience should be collecting thoughts and feelings and responses. Measuring customer experience is complicated, there's no doubt about it, and people often substitute, if you like, customer satisfaction for customer experience. And this is partly because most of the measurement that most companies do is at the end. So we measure at the end. So if I ask you about your experience at the end of the experience, you're asking the customer to have an average experience measurement of everything that happened from the first point they interacted with you till the current point that they're at. Now that's really hard because that's going to be a mixture of some average ones, some high ones, and some low ones. So you're going to get an average customer measurement. But you don't really know whether there are some elements of that journey were amazingly brilliant and some of them weren't particularly good. Also, customer satisfaction, the evidence seems to show is it is heavily weighted to things that didn't work well rather than things that did work well. So if you're on balance, if you had a great experience and a poor experience, customer satisfaction will tend down towards the poor experience because that's more memorable.
Yes, that's true. So what is your suggestion, that you measure continually?
Yes, you can. Now, there is a, like with all these things, it's a bit of a balance. And the customers, if you keep on asking the customer, are you okay? Are you okay? It's like sitting at a restaurant. And if the waiter comes up to you every 3 minutes and says, everything all right, you know, you tend to go away pretty quickly. So there is a tolerance of measurement, which we have to be aware of. But there are key points, as I say, if we map this customer journey effectively, we can almost identify when the best points are to measure or when the most critical points in that customer journey are to measure. And often the customer is not necessarily deterred from responding to you if they know they've passed through a point. So, for instance, if they purchased something, you know that's a point at which it would be good to measure. Or if they have asked a question about something, you know that's a good point to measure. And if you go to them after the purchase and ask them something else, you know, feedback processed at the end after they purchased, is that a good point to measure? So in any customer journey, there's probably some optimal points where you could put in some measurement just to see whether you have some sort of consistent level of high experience all the way through. And it just enables you to identify where the weak points are also in that journey.
And how would you recommend measurement? Because we've looked in the podcast before about the NPS, the Net Promoter Score. Is that the sort of thing you would use, or would you be a bit more sort of qualitative and give me your feelings around it?
Yes, I'm one of these people that says that Net Promoter Score is great, but again, I feel it's one of those management grab points, which is it's easy to do, simple to measure, let's just get it done, and we're done and dusted, we don't have to worry about it anymore. So NPS is great as a kind of macro level in an organisation, but for me, I don't think it's not really going to tell you about the more detailed experiences that the customer has. So without sounding too complex or creating too much cost, you do have to think of a way of measuring each part of that journey. The measure might be slightly different at the beginning, you know, in terms of my awareness of the brand through to you know, what's the lead up to purchasing, you know, how do I measure that? And perhaps more commonly afterwards, what's my experience of the product or service once I've used it? So I think there can be very specific measures you can put in place depending on the position in the customer journey. But you have to be able to design those to understand that you're probably measuring slightly different things at each point.
Yes. And do I need to measure all my customers or can I do a small number?
Well, if you're a large organisation with endless amounts of cash, you can. Naturally, with most companies, you know, you don't. A lot of this measurement could be automated. That's number one. But yes, I don't think you want to be measuring all your customers. If you can, that's great because you get universal view back. But very few companies have the ability to do all that. Having said that, there shouldn't really be, with automation processes and the ability to have a fairly active marketing management system, it shouldn't be too hard to automate measurement at most points for most customers. So it shouldn't be, you know, one in a million, but it doesn't have to be 999,000 out of a million either. So I think using the technology that's available, you should be able to get a fairly good view of a large section of the customers. And that's partly, of course, because each customer has a, you know, we understand that the nature of each customer having a slightly different requirement and a slightly different process and journey through your whole experience anyway. And so we need to measure what the highs and lows are according to customer types, of which there's going to be a fairly broad spectrum.
Yes, it's never as simple as just one thing for all customers, is it? One of the things I think is really important here is what I think a lot of companies start looking at their customer experience because their sales are going down. So you start doing it when there's a problem, whereas I think you're very much saying you should be doing this all the time.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one interesting thing you said there was when your customer experience goes down. Now, I think one of the key things that I've then discovered when I've been working this is that customer experience nearly always falls in line with employee experience. So if you, it's all very well spending all your time driving the organization towards the customer experience, but if you have ignored or you've neglected the employee experience, you tend to find that that falls in line. So if the employee experience is generally not very good or inconsistent and low quality, then that will generally be reflected in the customer experience that they provide. So there is a sort of an underlying internal view of this as well, which is, it's all very well to drive your customer experience, but you've got to make sure your employee experience, in terms of the employee understanding what's going on, what the strategy is, and how the customer experience goes on from the point that they may be on. So they're only at one point in the customer experience. What about all the other elements that happen in that customer experience? Are they aware of that? And are they trained? And do they understand what is expected at each of those points? So maintaining that customer experience, I think, is completely linked to making sure that the employees understand it, and there is an equivalent, and I would say almost as highly monitored and managed employee experience as it is for a customer.
Interesting, and that would be the same sort of techniques that you would check in with your employees about how they were feeling at certain points or at certain times.
Yeah, I mean, because there's nothing quite, you know, again, it sounds like a lot of work, but ultimately there's nothing quite like asking the employee, you know, particularly at the points in that customer journey where we know there's weaknesses, you know, how could we improve that? Making sure the employee is part of the generation of the journey and the improvement of that journey. They're the ones that are closest to the customer at that point. They're the ones that actually effectively want to do the good job at that point. And so they may say, well, I can't create good customer experience because I'm limited by X, Y, and Z. So understanding that you're listening to the employee is really important. Otherwise, they can't deliver the experience that you want as a company.
Thank you. Before you go, is there a company, you've mentioned BMW, is there another company that you can think of that does this really well?
There are a few. I have to say, often with these things, we end up looking at American companies. But I think when I've looked through most of this experience, I haven't experienced it myself, but Zappos, the American shoe company, seems to have understood this concept to a really quite intensive level. I think they've understood that, you know, shoe purchasing is clearly a highly switchable choice. Where you go to buy your shoes is something that you probably don't have loyalty about generally. But what they have found is by understanding, and they have completely driven down this employee experience thing, so that everybody in the organization understands that keeping the customer happy is of the number one objective. And if they can keep the customer happy all the way through the experience, then somebody will come back and they'll recommend and refer the store to others. So I think they are a great example. I mean, there are, you know, everybody to a certain extent has some experiences of great customer experience and equally of not so great. I think in the UK we'd probably still look at things like John Lewis to a certain extent of saying they still have pretty good customer service. It has its issues, as we all know. Anyone who's used John Lewis, it's not perfect. But they have understood that consistency and quality and excellence through the customer point the customer journey, from the point of understanding, walking through the door in the stores or entering online, through to the post purchase stuff, which I think they do pretty well. They are a fairly good example of a UK company that's done has focused on it and actually has pretty much built the company around it. And additionally, John Lewis has a huge focus on the employee experience as well. So that they match those two together.
Andrew Hatcher, thank you very much for that. And I should say that Andrew is currently researching a book which is due to be published on this very subject, and it's coming out towards the end of the year. Andrew, thank you very much for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.
Next week, we're discussing everything about freelancing, what it's like to be a freelance marketer, the good, the bad, and the frankly difficult. You can find all 26 previous episodes of the Cambridge Marketing Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and your smart speaker. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and a shout out to our growing number of subscribers from the UK, the US, the UAE, the Netherlands, and Azerbaijan. I'll catch you next week.